Welcome to the Circle Sessions featuring the Circle of Experts. Each week, one of the Circle of Experts joins me to talk about critical aspects of growing your podcast. The Circle of Experts are Yasmin Robles and Izzy Dadosky from Rebel Marketing, Tanisha English-Amamu of TJE Communications, and Don the Idea Guy. I'm Brett Johnson, my podcast guy from Circle 270 Media Podcast Consultants. This week, Don the Idea Guy is here. He possesses creative powers beyond those of mere mortals. Don the Idea Guy rescues those in need of innovative ideas through his brainstorming sessions. You can find out more at dontheideaguy.com. Don, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, doing great. You know, this time around, we are looking at our news articles to talk about, and we have a lot of them that are good news, bad news mixture, which is kind of odd.
It's life, good news, bad news.
You know, and maybe a mixture of heavier on bad, maybe, but there's light at the end of the tunnel after it as well, too. But in the past, we've talked about Odyssey, which has been a very radio focused company, but this is a couple of months old, but it's still worthy of talk because Odyssey bought a podcast studio called Pineapple Street Studios, which was cranking out some really great podcasts. I mean, these podcasts were award winning. They were being looked at by the Netflixes of the world and that sort of thing. What they were coming out with, and they end up shutting them down because Odyssey can't run their company properly. So it's one of those, killing more award-winning production companies. It's just like, wow, everything they touch seems to die on the vine.
Do you know Pineapple Die on the Vine? Ha ha ha. Do you know any of the programs produced by Pineapple?
No, I can't off the top of my head. And that was bad. I'm bad on my part because I did when I put this story up and I cannot remember.
I just wondered because I rarely know which studios things come out of. So quite possibly I know a show, but I don't know the producer.
Right. Exactly.
So obviously you're a bad news first kind of guy. Like you cover the closures and everybody who lost their jobs.
Well, okay. So here's some stuff that's going on. So Pineapple shows for TV networks included official podcasts for HBO and HBO Max. And just like that, Chernobyl, Dune Prophecy, Hacks, okay, House of the Dragon, The Last of Us. It had
all the hits.
I love this one, Missing Richard Simmons. Have you ever heard this? It was so...
I heard of all the other ones.
Oh, my God. It's so good. So, again, coming up with some great stuff and just like, let's just kill it because, we don't know what we're doing.
Well, they're in scramble mode. The fact that Odyssey still continues to get positive press about, look at what these guys are doing. I'm like, these guys are putting themselves out of business. Like you're barely hanging on. It could absolutely be, it could have been a case of restructuring, but at this point you're cutting off healthy limbs. You're cutting off healthy limbs. The patient is going to die.
Exactly. Exactly. Just it looked as though at the moment they had money to spend. Let's buy this. Cause we're going to, we can do it, and had no clue what they were doing.
Well, and then they also, I see in the article link that they just acquired a podcast discovery app called Moonbeam.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how those guys feel too, because it was probably a little up and comer, doing what they can to grow this audience to the point that it had value that Odyssey wanted to acquire it. And they're probably all excited, like, oh man, we're going to have so much exposure to all these other ones. It's going to be the new iHeart app. And nope, sorry guys.
Yeah. Luckily you got your money. It's in the bank. It's done. Yeah. It's mind boggling. Honestly, that just when you have something that good, you're killing the goose. No golden eggs. Just let Pineapple Street do what they do. Keep your fingers out of it. And it's a process. It's slow to produce these really great podcasts. You're going to put some money into them, but you get notoriety and you get these TV deals out of it. That's kind of the goal at that point in time.
And I don't know what the rules are on the filing for bankruptcy, but could they have spun it out, into its own entity?
I don't know. Yeah, exactly. From the story I read, and I don't have any insider information on what's going on, but I don't know. That's a good point.
That would have taken it off their bottom line too. They're making all these cuts so they don't have these expenses, but they're going to lose. They're not just cutting expenses. They're going to lose the profits they had from the advertising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It, yeah. Anyway,
it's a radio state of mind.
It is, quite frankly. Yeah. It's just that stay in your lane, do what you don't really think you know what you're doing, but don't quit messing around with other mediums. But, exactly.
You know, it would be interesting to go back and look and see if their C-level guys still got their bonuses this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you know,
because I'm going to say they did.
Yeah, probably so. Probably so. Yeah. There was a recent VidCon session I did not attend, but I got the news article from, called YouTube Decoded. Quite frankly, the what was recommended, how the recommendation algorithms work, wasn't a big surprise. I don't know how it really made news, but I think everybody thinks that it's the oft theorized about recommendation algorithms aren't specifically pointed at the videos or the creators, but they're at the viewer, which kind of makes sense. But I think it kind of got turned around. It's like, oh, the algorithms work for the creator because the creator is so big and they're creating so much stuff. It's like, no, it's the user being fed what they kind of want. It's and again, it's a good bad. It's a good bad, like you brought up.
It's a user being fed what the algorithm thinks you want. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get fed plenty of things that I'm like, it's like being shown an ad on the retargeting campaigns for, let's say I bought a baby shower gift for a coworker, and now they think I'm shopping for baby stuff, and mm-hmm. I can't get away from the baby cribs and the strollers and the toys, and I don't want it. I can't opt out of it. So the fact that you fed me a video that maybe I was researching something, maybe it came up as a recommendation and the topic was deceiving and I looked at it and went, not for me, mm-hmm. but now you're going to feed that to me all the time. The problem with social media, every platform, has been they literally have a mechanism for you to say, yes, I want to follow this. I want more of this. Mm-hmm. But instead of feeding you that, the leave it to an algorithm to decide what you want to see based on the things you watched. And it made a lot of money for TikTok. It enabled TikTok to increase their viewership, and everybody went, we need to do that too. So Facebook switched over too. They were the first ones to do it. Twitter X does it. And YouTube obviously is doing it now. And the downside is you're not showing me the things I literally told you I wanted to see. You know, there are plenty of YouTube accounts that I follow and I say, give me alerts when these guys go live, give me alerts when they post something new, and their alerts don't work. I don't get them. Right. I don't get them, but you're going to feed me a bunch of nonsense of stuff that I never asked to see. And that's the stuff you give me over and over again. So from a user, I think that's frustrating. Now from the content creator, you know, this is where we go bad news, good news. There are going to be a lot of content creators that would not have been found otherwise because of all the big boys that are out there dominating audience. And now if you can find a way to link what you're producing to the same kind of content, same kind of message, if you can get that algorithmic link connection, now they're going to show your stuff. So even if you don't have followers, you could still get found. Now, I don't know the trick to making sure that you're in alignment on those algorithms, but the opportunity is there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because this is a Facebook situation. I was on the reels, watching some reels, and all of a sudden I like playing pool, billiards, but one showed up. It's like, oh, you know, it was the instructional type of thing on how to handle this type of shot. It's like, well, that's cool. I played it through. Oh my gosh. I'm getting fed every instructional, which is fine for a while. But after a while, I was like, I don't play that much. I didn't ask for this necessarily, but boy, did the algo love me that day. It was feeding me and the same person, but then another guy. And then, you know, if I swipe too fast, like, well, we got to feed you a different type of person then.
Yep. The most egregious miss for me is I watched the YouTube rebroadcast of Late Night with Seth Meyers and John Oliver and Daily Show. I watch those clips. I watch the shorts. They crack me up. I'm watching because they're funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are there political leanings that I identify more with in their broadcast? Yes. Yes. Yeah. But I'm watching them because they're funny. Instead of showing me more comedy, the algorithm decides that I need to see more political pieces. So I get shown all these 15-minute recaps of some news broadcast by a fake news company that only exists on YouTube that I've never watched. I don't know any of the people. They're definitely not funny. But it fills the feed. It takes so much work to scroll past and get rid of them that it, for me, I abandon the platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think there's an abandonment time period here. I really do. It's like, well, if you're not on it for a day, it kind of resets itself. It seems maybe, I don't know.
Mileage may vary.
Maybe. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I have a sense that it kind of slows down a little bit, but hey, who knows? I'm not sure I'll go.
It's no still idea. Not right. And
no, it's not. No.
Hey,
no.
How about just show me the things I said I wanted?
And that's been the frustrating part of working with podcasters and some clients that I've got too, is that, you know, we're trying to push out content and ask for follows on Facebook, wherever it might be, social media. And you know that X amount of percentage is being fed on time or within a few hours, it's not being fed. So you really can't announce, hey, a new episode. And we don't do the, hey, new episode, listen. If we do talk about a new episode, it's the importance of it. Something's happened. It's a great interview, you know, that really justifying the hit, but it's like, it's not going to show up for 20.
And at least the podcast recording is, you can time shift. You know, people may not listen to it at the real time anyway, but if you're doing a live broadcast and you want live participation, social media is a terrible way to do it. You know, we've said from the very beginning, you need an email list. Mm-hmm. You get to control when you send out the email. For the most part, they are deliverable within 95% as long as it's a subscriber and you've got a good reputation as a sender. Social media is not left there to ratchet back. Will you end up in a spam folder from time to time? Yes. Will Google send you to the promotions tab occasionally? Yes. But at least you're getting to the inbox. That is your greatest asset. Make them sign up for your list. Get them to sign up for your list. That's how you're going to be able to alert people to pay attention to your content when it goes out. Do not rely on an algorithm. Do not rely on follows.
Yeah, exactly. Another good, bad story, and we're going to spin this, and this is apolitical of anything, is NPR and PBS losing their, you know, federal money.
Yeah.
And both Don and I are big public radio, public television supporters. I mean, I cut my teeth in public radio in college. I love public, still listen to public radio today, catch PBS occasionally. I'm just not a big TV watcher, but I understand the cuts. I get it. I understand. And it was been promised for decades. And the president finally said, yes, it's going to happen. I see it as an opportunity, though. I'm going to specifically talk about NPR, and I'll let you chime in, that in podcasting, we're talking about the increase of the awareness and the importance of a value for value model. In that, create something that somebody wants so badly that they'll pay for it over and over and over again every month. I think NPR has an opportunity to really crank up the bar because they already have the model of donations or support. So now crank it up. You don't have regulations on top of you because you've lost the federal funding. Start really doing it. Start creating stuff. Not that they aren't already, but really start creating stuff that is can't miss radio. Can't miss audio, and you're doing it already. It's just take it to the next step because you're in the situation to be leaders. They've been leaders in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, they are. At one time, they were the trendsetters, right? You'd experiment with things on there, and then it would catch on because you do have people who are at the early stages of discovery. Mm-hmm. and production. I was always a big fan.
They're used to long form programming.
Yep,
they're used to it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's as you said, I'm a huge fan of public broadcasting, the TV. I grew up on Sesame Street. I grew up on Electric Company. Grew up with Mr. Rogers. As I got older, I got into mystery. And then I loved the McLaughlin Group. I don't know if you remember McLaughlin.
Yeah.
Most people won't remember that. I'm sure there are YouTube clips. Go watch. It was Bill Maher before Bill Maher.
Yeah.
I mean, it was way more knowledgeable.
Yeah.
A lot more intelligent people playing that game.
The tension of it as well.
Yeah.
It was just good. It was good. Yeah.
So I think that it was always kind of this undiscovered treasure anyway. But as a kid growing up, my family did not have a lot. So we weren't subscribing to cable. We still had the regular channels. And man, I got so much value and just basic love of reading and that kind of stuff from from PBS. And then you get older and it's NPR. And if you're listening to this, it's because you're a podcaster. You like podcasts. Podcasts would not be as popular as they are if it weren't for the NPR podcasts.
Right.
Those were the ones that jumped from one category to another. They went into the mainstream with their coverage on storytelling.
Yeah. Go look at a top 25 list of who's ever listed is for podcasts. And you're going to see probably 5 to 6, maybe 7 of them being NPR affiliated or public radio or, you know, PRI. That's the way it is. Yeah.
All these true crime podcasts would not have happened without NPR doing their investigative reporting. It's just, we owe so much to what they do. It's a shame that the 1% that the government was donating, they don't want to contribute to it anymore. It does the public good. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know that Netflix is supposedly taking on Sesame Street and they'll have Sesame Street on there. But the great thing about PBS was that anybody at any financial level could tune into PBS and watch it for free. And now you're going to have a subscription. I hope they do something to continue making that accessible for people who maybe don't have the money to pay for a subscription to Netflix. PBS. PBR is for after the show.
Right, exactly.
PBS was great. NPR, fantastic. I mean, I love NPR. There are so many programs I listen to. I'm a huge Hawaii buff, and most of the NPR programs I listen to are coming out of HPR, Hawaiian Public Radio. And that's where I made my contribution because I wanted to support the content, as you said, value for value. I want to support the content that gives me value. Mm-hmm. And I hope they're able to continue doing what they're doing. I know that early on when they knew the government was going to be taking away future contributions and funding, they seem to go, okay, it's great. We, you know, a very small percentage of the overall budget that we get, we're going to have to tighten our belt, but we're still going to be able to make it happen. But then unfortunately, the newly announced clawbacks make life difficult. Imagine if your boss called you after a month of paychecks and said, yeah, I'm sorry, we're going to have to let you go. And there's not going to be any more paychecks for you. And you go, wow, that's horrible. I'm going to have to go find another job, but I'll get money. And then he goes, and we're going to take all the money we paid you last month too.
Yeah.
The money's gone. It's spent. It was budgeted.
Right.
And now they want to claw that back. It drives me crazy. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, it is. It is. So like I said, it's a good, bad, ultimately I feel for, specifically we'll talk NPR, but I'm excited for them. Quite frankly, though, I just see this, you're unshackled by regulations that you have to only say your sponsorships a certain way. And I'm not meaning NPR go sound like a commercial radio station or I don't mean that. I think they're still going to hold to very little sponsorship, but encouragement. I mean, even to the point when they do a news coverage story, they out in the front of it say, we're doing a news story about, let's say Intel. I don't know. Well, anyway, and they say right out front, Intel is a supporter of NPR.
Right.
They tell you right away that, okay, we're going to do a news story. They support us. Whatever lens you want to look at and listen to this story, we told you up front. I don't think it's going to go away. I really don't. And I don't think support for NPR is going to go away. It probably will increase because of people being scared. Now, I feel bad for the very, and HPR might be in the same, I think it is actually in the same scenario that a lot of funding is going to go away. Over 50, 60% of the small public radio stations funding is going to go away because of the cuts.
Well, HPR was one of the groups that came out and said that they weren't worried about the future.
Okay.
That it was a small percent. I don't think it was 1%, but it may have been 10.
Yeah, I saw some stations up in the 40s, 50%.
Really? Yeah. They definitely weren't in that boat. At least that's not what they said early on. But I know when they started talking about the clawbacks, they did start saying, hey, we need your support now more than ever. And I think that's because they have to recoup the money they've already spent too. I think that it is an opportunity. I think every problem is an opportunity, really. I mean, as a creative, you got to look at every problem as an opportunity. And I think there are a lot of things that NPR and PBS could do, not just from the fundraising, but from the support side. most people made their contributions. Now, they didn't do it for this, or they supported the content, so they made their donations. But part of that support came from, oh, I get a tote bag. I get a hat. Oh, I get a shirt. And there's very little beyond the reward for a donation, merch-wise, on an NPR website. Like, there's very little that you can buy outright. There might be one or two shirts, but there's an opportunity there for a whole store. And why you need a whole merchandise section, all the things that I can buy without making the donation, because I'll buy more of those. Donation you're going to get from me once a year. You know, maybe I'll renew my membership or I up my membership. But t-shirts, coffee mugs, I buy them for me. I buy them for other people. You need to really crank up the merch machine. And I think that they would see a lot of funding for that. David Letterman is still selling Late Night with David Letterman shirts and mugs on his website. That shows you.
Made it cool. And it's cool to wear that stuff. Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely an opportunity, but I don't necessarily think the opportunity is going to come from the broadcasting content side. I think it's going to come from the other more lot. Why don't we have live events that are NPR, kind of the old school? NPR could be your local radio station again. Mm-hmm. Whereas all the local ones are now franchised. They could be your local station again. The one that you feel that has your heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agree. Yeah. So I think they'll be okay. It's going to hurt the next couple of years. Totally. Oh, yeah. I get that. It may be a little bit of a different sound possibly, but I think they'll come out of it okay. I really do. Cause they have a lot of smart people working at NPR and PBS. They really do. I think they have the most forward thinking people in broadcasting. Honestly. Yeah,
hold on. I'm sitting there talking about the merch and the donation that I made to HPR, and I'm looking right at my HPR hat that I got for my donation. Like, couldn't buy this hat. You couldn't buy this hat without the donation. And yeah. I would have absolutely bought this hat a year ago.
Right, exactly. No, that's a cool looking hat too. Yeah, you got to create something that looks cool. People will wear it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, you bet. Yeah. You had come up with, you found earlier, a couple of weeks ago, this e-marketer quiz. Talk about it.
Yeah. So I'm a huge fan of e-marketer, and certainly they produce the newsletters and there's a subscription level, but there's also a free level that you can just get a daily update. And one of the things they send out is a quiz, and they'll ask you a trivia question about marketing. Mm-hmm. And the one from earlier in July was a true false question. It said, true or false, more than 80% of US agency and brand side advertisers are advertising on podcasts. More than 80%. That's a huge number. And the response to that was false, but it was close because the actual number was 78%. So is it 80%? No, it's only 78%. And I look at that and go, man, how times have changed. Almost 80% of US agencies and the brand themselves, their advertising departments, are investing in podcast advertising. Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's mind-boggling if you think about it, how quickly that, and factor that in as well, that how low a percentage of podcasters that actually accept advertising.
Oh, really? Do you know what that number is?
I hear from the industry maybe 30 to 40%.
Of all the podcasts, or 30-40 take advertising.
Yeah.
Except every, wow.
Most are doing it for themselves, you know, a branding opportunity.
Now, are these smaller groups that maybe advertisers, an agency wouldn't buy anyway?
Probably. And that's okay. You know, but so you've got this X amount of spots that can actually be purchased, in a podcast, you know, that it doesn't start turning you off.
Yeah. It's
wild.
It went from a point where agencies at buying at that level had no interest in podcasts.
Right.
That's like they used to have no interest in digital. Yeah. And then all of a sudden they're the biggest spenders. Now, mm-hmm. there's a lot of problems that come along with that because they will beat you down to the lowest rate ever and they want to buy everybody in bulk programmatic stuff. But if you can say, yeah, these gigantic brands and gigantic agencies are buying podcast advertising at those levels, boy, as a smaller podcaster who wants advertising, it opens the door for you to go in and go, you want to be like the big boys? 78% of the big boys are buying podcast advertising. Yeah. Hey, I know you're not Papa John's and you're not going to buy $1 million in podcast advertising, but you're my neighborhood pizza shop and I put together a podcast about business in our neighborhood. You guys should absolutely be spending some money on my podcast.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't done the research into this, but we've talked about this before, is that luring an advertiser to your podcast may be more than just a spot or 30 seconds or 60 seconds in your podcast. There are other things you can do as a podcaster to support that money coming in. You have an email newsletter. You have a huge social media fan base. Lots of other ways to get exposure.
Yeah, the feature and the sponsorship. The hardest thing to sell is an ad.
Yeah.
The easiest thing to sell is a partnership that they feel like they're part of. They felt that they help you create the feature inside the show where you spotlight them rather than just an ad running. We did a thing on the radio where we had this day in music history. And it was sponsored by a record shop. The record shop would not have just bought ads, but they loved being a part of this music history feature. And yes, ultimately it is advertising, but it's more marketing than advertising. So yeah, don't just go out and try and pitch ads. We've always talked about that. Come up with a feature, come up with a sponsorship, yeah, the promotional aspect, and definitely go in with it with knowing what return on investment you're going to bring to them, not how much money they're going to spend with you. What are you going to bring to them? Because they don't have money to spend with you, but boy, do they have room for more business on Wednesday nights if you can get more orders in on Wednesdays.
Right. Well, one of the key findings that you note here is talking about specifically podcast ad conversions. So, you know, this whole study is just done on the ads themselves. They haven't even researched the extra stuff that's going on for the sponsorships, if it's happening. So yeah, let's say
this is just ads, and this is the lowest rate ads. Like this, yeah.
So if it's really only being ad buys, and you're offering more, you've already differentiated yourself.
Yep.
It's like I'm a campaign, not just an ad buy.
And the nice thing about them at this level that we're talking about, the agency level, the nice thing about having the number that high is that the industry still says that most brands are still under investing in podcasting. Mm-hmm. So they think 78% is low. And I think it's amazing because they didn't just print more money. That came from other budgets. As we joked pre-show, probably radio, but it probably came from print too. And probably a little bit came from digital because it's new and it's hot and the conversions are higher. And that's going to be the next article there. But opportunity, baby.
Yeah, I can give you a real life example, and I won't name any names because I don't, you know, he wouldn't want me to say that. But I have a studio here in Columbus, Ohio that we rent out, and this gentleman does a podcast talking to specifically businesses that do heavy item logistics. You know, the big things you see rolling down the highway, big items. Okay. So you think, oh my gosh, what a boring podcast. But what he did, he used to own a magazine that sold ads to this industry. So that was the mouthpiece for the industry. He sold that magazine, got bored, decided, you know, I already have these contacts. I want to stay in the industry after 10 years. I know these people, creates a podcast. He's getting thousands of dollars dropped on him to do this podcast about logistics.
Wow.
The narrower the niche, the money's in the niche.
That is absolutely true. And I will say niche. I don't care. Yeah. I don't care. I don't care who knows it. I know it's supposed to be niche.
The reaches are in the niches, you know.
Right. It doesn't work that way. Riches are in the niches.
Right. Exactly. But, you know, I loved hearing that story because it just solidified real world that yes, you think only 500 people are listening. You think only 500 are listening to your podcast. You got 500 that are worth something to somebody.
Oh, yeah. But even more because they're specialized.
They're specialized, and you're the opportunity to get to reach them on a weekly, whatever, if it's a series, it doesn't matter. You're a marketing partner for them that they want to, well, in fact, he pulled one advertiser from the magazine he had just sold, went to him, you know, offered a sponsorship, said, yeah, why would I want to put a bunch all my ad, an ad in a magazine that has all my competitors in it? I'll spend it with you. As a solo,
especially sponsor. if you have some of the audience that he wants, and
The guy has a reputation of doing. He did a great podcast interview, and it did exactly what it was supposed to do. So don't doubt what you're doing, even though you think it's a small audience. It doesn't matter
if you've got an audience of five people and it's the right five people.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and speaking of not necessarily five people, but, you know, let's target it on. You found an article about, you know, Gen Z media consumption. This is amazing.
Yeah, this is an audience that everybody's chasing, right? It's the new one with the spending. So every generation, at some point, they flip from the previous one to marketing directly to the new one because they got their first paychecks.
Right.
And Gen Z. First, let me say this article shares a stat that I thought was impressive, and that was 44% of the general population. So that's any generation. 44% of them are at least somewhat influenced by podcast ads. Now, it doesn't say they heard the ad and they ran right out and bought it, but at some level, they were influenced by a podcast ad. That's awesome.
Four out of 10 people.
Brett, what is the most recent stat you have on the percentage of people who are podcast listeners? So for the last thing I heard, it was 50%.
Now creeping into at least general awareness, one podcast listen per week. I think it's in the 67% range. Okay. So, you know, we are, it's creeping up. I don't think it's saturation yet. People are not talking. We're at that saturation point yet in regards to, well, it can't go any higher. It can. So,
let's say 60%, just to be on the low of the new increase. 60% of the population is listening to a podcast. 44% of them are influenced by it. You don't get stats like that with any audience on any platform.
I know.
That's awesome.
Pick the right podcast to be a part of, and people are going to be talking about you.
So now here's the Gen Z thing. So this came out of a Gen Z media consumption study. And it talks about how podcasts are reshaping their attention and the influence and impact that podcasts have on Gen Z specifically. So it says the big takeaway for me, and there's a ton of stuff in there, but Gen Z is more influenced than any other generation by ads played during podcast. So now we're back to talking about the lowest form of marketing in a podcast, ads that people skip. I skip ads. You play your ad and I know it's 30 seconds long. I'm skipping once. If it's 60, I'm hitting it twice. I'm talking to you, Daily Hustle. So we're not talking about the best practices of embedding your marketers' content and mentions inside of your content, creating that feature that we discussed just seconds ago about creating a feature that could spotlight somebody. So it's content instead of that. This is an ad and they're influenced by ads more than anybody else. And maybe it's because they're not as jaded towards them. Maybe it's because the sponsorship of the fact they're advertising on a program they're passionate about. We always found that to be true in radio, that boy, radio listeners were loyal to the advertisers who brought them their content. That was never more apparent to me than when the station I was working for ended up going off the air. People still went and supported because they brought them the last months of being on, you know, being able to broadcast. So, man, what a great statistic.
I know. Yeah. Well, I think a really good example of ads done well, I think by Gen Zers for Gen Zers. If you listen to Morning Brew podcast,
yeah,
I think you got a couple of Gen Zers that just, I can relate to them. It's just, they're a little goofy at times, but they have fun and they're just dropping in, I don't know, just common stuff that they're doing, just off the wall type of comments to their ads. But you listen to them because you just kind of want to go how goofy they're going to be.
Yeah, they are goofy. to the point of I can't listen to their podcast every day, even though they do produce like three of them a day because they're so goofy. But we were talking about YouTube shorts before. They do a YouTube short that's a silly skit. It's like an SNL skit based on their top news coverage that day, their headline. It's very engaging and entertaining. And I think it's because they're producing ads that are more like content than just ads.
Right.
So,
yeah,
again, they're talking about influenced by ads. I can't tell you the last time I was influenced by an ad. I'm so jaded from working in the industry. So that is so exciting from that standpoint.
It's funny you bring that out because you and I probably sit in that same kind of chair that going, okay, it makes us cringe listening to ads and watching ads.
Right.
Because we deal with them all of our life in our previous lives.
We've seen how the ad sausage is made.
We do. And how the creativity is just sucked out of it because the advertiser wants this, and this in it. And it's hard enough to tell them no phone number. It doesn't matter anymore. It's got to be website, you know, and the creativity is just not there. They have to have the ROI or so they say so, or an ad agency is just mailing it in saying, yeah, let's just do this. So
I can only give you X amount of cost per point. We don't care what we're going to advertise. We're not going to do a custom ad for your format. You're going to run the same ad on your country station that we're running on the hip hop station.
Right. Exactly. So we're a little jaded in that regard. So when this type of information comes out, there's that second hope that, okay, ads can make a difference. And the Morning Brew, I think, is one example. You do it in the way that talks to that generation, that Gen Z. And us being Gen Xers doesn't hit the mark necessarily. The product doesn't hit the mark necessarily, but it certainly is interesting to see what they're doing and understand, okay, I get it. I get what you're trying to do. I'll live with that.
I mean, you're basically getting the ad influence that the industry used to have on boomers. Mm-hmm. I mean, boomers were very heavily influenced by advertising. It was new ish. Mm-hmm. The fact that it's history repeating itself is just very interesting to me. And it'll be interesting to watch as they age up. I would have thought they'd been even more cynical about that. And the fact they're open to it and being influenced and impacted by advertising is awesome. Yeah.
Well, and it's got to be the product or service that's being advertised. I can't off the top of my head think of what.
It has to be a good alignment. It has to be in good alignment.
Right. It does. And I think that's why it doesn't hit me, because it's not really in alignment with what I'm dealing with in my world. But it definitely has to be. I'm going to pay a little bit more attention to the ads now because I know what they're doing. It's just I wasn't paying attention to what they're advertising.
Yeah, you're not in their demo for the home delivery of matcha.
Right. No, exactly. Exactly. Not even close to it, or some app on a phone that's going to help me budget.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not there, but boy, Gen Z is. That's for sure. Yeah.
Very cool. I loved ending on that. Those few bits of high notes about the advertising and podcast industry right now. It's looking great, guys. It's looking great.
Exciting. It really, really is. You know, just from, you know, on my personal level of doing what I'm doing with my clients, they're still excited about doing podcasting. They get it. And then just that when the ones that are exiting, they're exiting for a reason. And it's not because it's not working. It's because they're run out of content possibly and they need to take a break. Yes. Yeah, you're right. You should. TV shows are in seasons.
Yep.
Why you do that? Take a break and move on and come back. I know you will, you know, sort of thing. And we'll work with you then. So, yeah. So we have a ton of stuff people could comment on. What's a great way to, you know, get up with you? I don't agree with you at all. NPR, PBS, Don.
You're welcome to disagree with me on any of the social media platforms. Everybody else does. You should feel free to do so as well. You can find me as Don the Idea Guy pretty much everywhere.
Gotcha. Yeah. And me, I'm going to respond probably best on LinkedIn. Hit me on LinkedIn. And you know, I'm on the web with my own website too, as well.
Cause he is not a Gen Zer.
I'm not a Gen Zer. Exactly. I'm an old.
You're not on the TikToks. You're not on the TikToks, Red.
No. Oh,
No.
I thought maybe Blue Sky might be a great X alternative. No,
yeah, it's just the usage isn't there. Do you have a TikTok account, Brett?
I don't. No.
Oh, okay. So I have an account. I can go in and watch. I can go and interact, but I have not produced a TikTok video.
Yeah, no, I have been on it enough that it became too addictive.
Man, it chased me away. Like,
can't do it.
How do people sit here and watch this for this long?
No. I can't do this. I can't lose an hour before I know it.
Short attention span theater.
But yeah, big time. Yeah, but yeah, circle270media.com is a great place to get a hold of me too.
You should find Brett. Yeah, go look for Brett out there. circle270media.com.
Exactly.
With all the circle of friends and experts.
and experts here in the circle sessions. Circle sessions. Here we go. Yes, I need circle sessions. I need that PBR now. Exactly.
Yeah, you're gonna have to.
Wait a minute. Before we leave, let's give I need you a coffee recommendation and a beer recommendation from you.
What's this?
Yeah, I need a coffee and a beer recommendation. You're doing the beer and the coffee, right? You have
always. Yeah, sure. Coffee.
Have you done anything good recently?
So Kona, I accept no substitutes. Kona coffee is amazing. And since our government is angering every other foreign producer of coffee, it's the only coffee produced in the United States. Yeah. And it is the best coffee ever. So that, but on a different note, if you don't want to go that snooty about it, I'm really loving, and I'm going to totally draw blank, Bones Coffee. I'm in love with Bones Coffee now.
Yeah. Okay.
They have fantastic, like, if you like the flavored coffees, like my wife loves the Cinnabon flavored stuff. They have a pineapple coffee that I got it because it was pineapple and I love the tiki stuff, but I'm probably not going to like this, but I'll get it just because it was as if you had sweetened your coffee with a little bit of pineapple juice. So you still got all the coffee, and I use coconut creamer. So it was like a coffee daiquiri. It was awesome. I loved it.
That's cool. I'm not offering any, I just needed some recommendations.
Beer.
I
haven't had any awesome beers lately, but I did discover a website called Tip Top Cocktails. And I'm not sure that's the .com, but just Google Tip Top Cocktails. Their cocktails come canned, about a half this size here. And if you take them, put them in pour it into a shaker, add ice and shake it like a regular cocktail and pour it into a cocktail glass, it tastes like you picked it up at your local speakeasy. They are delicious. The blend, it's a legit cocktail with really good ingredients. I've had the Mai Tai and Jungle Bird, which are obviously two tiki drinks. They're fantastic. So when I can't get to the tiki bar, I've got that right here in the house.
You're ready to go. That's
ready to go, man.
You've been set for summer then. That's good. Yeah. Good. Hey, well, thanks for joining me again. I appreciate it.
We'll see you soon.